morning and welcome everyone to Live Dharma Sunday for January 15th, 2012. I'm Reverend Koyo Kobose, and I'm very glad you joined us this morning. It's so nice to get together and share on a quiet Sunday morning. Very nice. Well, let's begin with our guest today, Patty Cayo of Camarillo, California, and she was part of the Lay Minister 4 group that was inducted last year in May, and you could call on Patty for a Dharma glimpse.
Thank you, Bright Dawn, for the opportunity to share my Dharma glimpse, which I'm excited about because it's added another approach to my practice and regenerated some enthusiasm for me. The teachings I get from Buddhism are aimed at looking at one point, to look into the nature of my mind, to achieve an awakened mind, so that I may have such a mind that is in a state that will also benefit others. I'm aware of the clutter that constantly floats around in my mind, thoughts that are not only unhelpful but actually harmful to a state of peace. And I want to create a space in my mind for compassion, but 50 years of habits and conditioned thinking makes for a challenging environment in there. One of the challenges is the constant inner dialogue in my head and reaction to other people's behavior or ideas, as if I need to set the world straight, if only in my own mind, to make things right as I see them, to make me right over and over. I fall so easily to comparison, judgments, and then anger and resentment. These are all perceptions that I manufacture, and once in place, these thoughts dictate my mood and behavior and stand between me and a compassionate attitude. I am stuck in points of view that I have completely created. This week I was leafing through our new book for the Bright Dawn Keep Going Continuing Education class, a book called The Way of the Bodhisattva by Shanti Deva, and I was impressed by an idea presented of actually taking care of my mind. I had never thought of this before, and when thinking about it now, I realize that my mind is something that only I can control, and I get to pick what goes in it. Since I decide what goes into it, why would I choose to fill my mind with such things as anger and resentment? I've been treating my brain like it was in charge, running on autopilot, allowing every bit of negativity to run riot in there without supervision and without the least bit of concern of the effect this has on my outlook and my attitude in turn towards others, when I should be giving the care of my mind the utmost consideration. As it says in the introduction of The Way of the Bodhisattva, we should guard our minds with the same care with which we would protect a broken or wounded arm while moving through an unruly crowd, and no thought should be allowed to develop into action unchallenged. Some of these thoughts I can stop at the gate, and some reactions are so spontaneous that I'm not even aware of the process. Being ever vigilant about what thoughts and reactions I attach to and nourish requires constant self-awareness and introspection, practicing mindfulness in everything I do. Take good care of your mind. There is nothing more important, since all that we are is the result of what we have thought. Thank you.
Thank you very much. As I listen to the Dharma Glimpse, many good statements made kind of light up like a neon sign and say, yeah, that's right, that's well expressed, that's, you know, impactful. One of them was, she says, more aware of the garbage floating around in my mind. And just this morning, as I looked through the emails, as most of us all do when we start the day, you know. And one of the emails I have subscribed to Care 2 and also Next World. These are two services that are that some friends have forwarded us emails, and you know, they have good content in terms of how to take care of our environment, and you know, interesting information, tips. And this one particular email this morning was Surfer Recycles, and it was you click on it and you go to a video in on the north shore of Oahu in Hawaii, young surfer, and he and his friends were talking about plastic bags. You know, you go to fast food place, you get the food in a plastic bag, plastic water bottles. When he goes out surfing, he grabs a water bottle. And he says that they explain how recycling plastic, that how because of the ocean currents, a lot of the things that somehow go into the ocean, plastic bags, end up on the east side of Oahu Island. And of course, it's more dramatic when you see the video, you see the visual of it, and then you see how, for example, plastic bags, I can't remember if it was turtles, big sea turtles, eat the plastic bag. They think that they're jellyfish. They regurgitate it and feed it to their young, and the young can't handle it. It affects them. And and then they went into how, even though you think, okay, I'll recycle, he says maybe only 5% of plastic that is recycled gets recycled. You know, and just because you think that, oh, I'll recycle, and you put it into a special bin, it might not end up being recycled. For example, even all the recycling centers in Hawaii, they pack it up and send it to another place on the mainland. And the main point of the video, again, the Hawaiian surfer said, you know, we should recycle, but better yet, don't use a plastic bottle. You know, have your own permanent bottle and put the water in there. Plus, he said, bottled water is a giant scam. There's nobody regulating it, and a lot of tests show that it's no better than tap water and all of this stuff. And he said, and the whole movement toward bringing your own bag to the, when you go to take out, so that they don't have to use a plastic bag. Or when you go grocery shopping, bring your own bags. You know, your permanent bag, your cloth bag or whatever. So I was thinking, you know, I just flashed through my mind a cartoon I saw. Two monks carrying a placard walking down the street, and one was, Jesus saves, and the other one said, Buddha recycles. Of course, this is sort of a takeoff on a misnomer joke about reincarnation, but to use over and over again in the true sense of the word, instead of wasting. So when we apply this to our own mind, you know, you want to put good things in there and use them over and over. You don't need new things. You don't need to chase for spiritual nuggets, insights. You know, we have all that, you know, it's already there, you know. Take good care of one's mind. Indeed, we can have a lot of say on what's going on in there, what goes in there, rather than having my mind control me. You know? What a concept. I'd like to talk a little bit about, it's an actually extension of this point that we're making today, but I'll come back around to it. A couple of days ago, I drove down from Central California down to Los Angeles, and an old family friend passed away down there, and the family had a funeral service. It was the patriarch of their family, and he had turned 100 years old in March, and he passed away in December. He was very active in the Buddhist Temple of Chicago, and he had 5 adult grown children. He was a lay leader at the temple. In fact, his family donated the entire altar that the Buddhist Temple of Chicago uses, you know, and those altars are tremendously expensive. A Japanese style altar at the Buddhist Temple of Chicago. He was a very devoted, dedicated person to the temple and to Buddhism. And while there, and the local minister there, and also a minister from the Bay Area who used to live in Chicago and was close to the family, and then the resident minister from Buddhist Temple of Chicago, there were 4 of us doing the service. And in the little room before the service where the ministers robe up and wait for the start of the service, this was Gardena Buddhist temple, and most temples have their newsletter. And there was a newsletter there, and Reverend Marvin Harada, who's wrote the article that was in the front page of the newsletter, lying there on the table, was talking about teaching Buddhism, and he told. Related how he did a funeral service, and the person's Dharma name was to teach the Dharma. Kyo, K-Y-O, Kyo Ho. Ho is the Dharma, and Kyo is to teach. Said, gee, interesting Dharma name that this person has. To teach the Dharma. And this person who had passed away was very similar as a very devoted church member and respected the Dharma very much, but he was not a learned person. He was not the person who would get up and give lectures. And so what does it mean to teach the Dharma? Reverend Marvin was writing about in his article. When you think of the phrase teaching Buddhism, you think, oh, you expound and you lecture. Okay. And what does it mean when you say learning Buddhism? The same thing, but you're on the receiving end. Oh, you learn these concepts, you learn these teachings. But he says, no, that's not what teaching and learning means in Buddhism. Because when you look at this man, you see that he lived the Dharma. And you haven't learned Buddhism just because you could spout off in a scholarly fashion knowledge about Buddhism. It's only when you live the Dharma. And that's the way that you really teach the Dharma too. By example, people see it, living it. You don't even have to be aware that person is teaching the Dharma, or that oneself is teaching, or that oneself is learning. You're living it. That's true sincerity, I guess you might say. This is how the Buddha taught. Okay, always about living the Dharma. And I remember when I was in high school, I was working at a hardware store, and the owners, they were Jewish. And I remember the lady said, yeah, I really respect, the Buddhists. The hardware store is right near the temple in Chicago. She said, because, you know why? Because Buddhists live their religion. And, of course, she probably meant in the good way that they don't, most people, they said, oh, here, you believe in kindness, or all religions teach love and so forth, but they give only lip service to it. Do they really live it in their everyday life? And her observation was Buddhists live their religion. Okay. I remember this lady saying that, and I was in high school. How did the Buddha teach? You're talking about teaching Buddhism, learning the Dharma. How did the Buddha teach? So I remember that was the title of an article that my father wrote, Reverend Gyome Kubose, in the Center Within book, collection of his articles. So I went this morning to take a look at it, and I'm opening the book right now, and it says, How the Buddha Taught, page 52 in the Center Within. I want to share this with you. We always have to be revisiting this work in progress that is our spirituality. Here's what he says. Although it's important to know what the Buddha taught, in another way, it's more important to know how he taught. I talked about this recently to our temple's high school students. I started out by saying, today, I'm not going to tell you about the Buddha's teachings. These things, you can read about later. Instead, let's look at how Buddha taught. The Buddha never gave answers on a silver platter. He never said, this is the truth. You should believe it and follow it. On the contrary, Buddha said, don't believe something just because I say it. Don't follow any teachings until you test them through your own experience. So the Buddha always said to look into our own lives. The article continues. So then I asked the students, what is the most important thing in your life? Okay, now this is, he's asking, hey, let's self-introspect, which is the Buddhist method. One girl said, oh, my parents. And so we talked about the importance of parents. Another student said, money. I said, oh, is money the most important thing? Everyone said, no. However, I countered that we can't deny that money is very important. If we don't have money, you cannot function in today's society. Another boy said, life itself is most important. Well, What do you mean, life itself? I asked. He must have taken biology because he answered, life is composed of cells. And I commented, well, it's very important to keep your body alive and healthy. Yes, he replied, without a healthy body, we cannot help others. This led into exploring the value of altruism. We continued to consider many other different answers to the question of what is the most important thing in life. Although many aspects were discussed, we did not arrive at one final answer. I explained that we each have to think things out for ourselves. This is the Buddhist approach. The Buddha never handed out teachings like a pill saying, here, swallow this. Instead, he always asked, is that right? What do you think? He offered teachings so that you could try them in your own life. He did not tabulate his teachings. His teachings were not static or statistical in form. His teachings were dynamic and always dealt with value in one's life. So, for instance, what is real happiness in your life? Well, many children are happy when their fathers give them a weekly allowance. But when that allowance is gone by the middle of the week, they're sad. When you examine things that you feel bring you happiness, well, things always are changing. Does real happiness come from external things? What is the basis of real happiness in your life? These are the kinds of challenges that the Buddha always asked. He never commanded people. In Buddhism, there's no dogma, no set of formal, dogmatic teachings. The teachings are always put within the context of an individual's experience. Understanding should come from living, not from the head. This is the Buddhist way. This is how the Buddha taught. And that's the end of the article. Indeed, I really, if we look upon a certain theme or, you know, our Dharma glimpse or one's own, what I've experienced recently, and it takes shape in a certain form, you know, a certain, you know, taking care of one's mind. How do we learn something? Okay. What is it when someone says, well, you know, we're learning this so that we could teach it, or becoming a lay minister? You learn about Buddhism so you could regurgitate, you know. I think it's, I won't say just common, but, and I won't say seductive either, but, and I won't say it's a trap either, but whenever we learn anything, that's how we approach things. As the subject, and then here's the subject matter, the object, subject and object. Here's the learner, and here's what is learned. The subject-object dualism, I guess. And we fail to see the tremendous interaction between the two. We feel, oh, here's a body of knowledge, and if I master this, by master I mean we could talk about it. But personal experience, and when you think about it, anything that's of a real skill or a value involves experience. There's no substitute for experience. Life knowledge. Okay. This is, of course, what we mean by the difference between wisdom and knowledge. Wisdom is based in experience. Knowledge is based in the head. And, of course, we don't discount the importance of knowledge and knowing things in our head. But you got to take it and then live it. And that part is, I think, is what slips. And so, and because everybody, people around us, the whole the way society is, it's all structured that way. So teach me about Buddhism. I want to learn about Buddhism. Okay, read these books, listen to these lectures, talk to these teachers, pick their brains, their mind, and you could talk about it when someone asks you, what about Buddhism? And there's something very true to the statement, those who know don't talk about it. Not as a means of a strategy or a decision. The more you really know about something, the more you realize that you don't know too much in that sense of knowing. So to know something, what do you mean by to know? Same thing like we say, well, what do you mean by teach or learn? What do you mean by know when you know something? You know, who would you rather have to be, a doctor or a surgeon, someone who can talk about what's to be done, or someone who has done it and knows, has experience doing this kind of surgery? You see? Somebody could talk about gardening, read a lot of books about it, say, oh, here's, you do this, that, this, but, you know. Sometimes there's a saying, oh, there's always a tremendous slip between the spoon and the mouth. When you live Buddhism, you know, and how do you do that? Well, again, when I started out to talk, the sincerity, I guess that would be a good definition. Okay. You're not worried about subject-object. You become. To live the Dharma means to become the Dharma. And you're not aware of the difference. Here I am, and I'm going to live something out there, the object, the Dharma. So you, and yet at the same time, like I said, you know, you study, there's importance of that. Don't go the other way to the extreme and make that mistake. I don't need to know the basics or whatever. But the most common mistake today is too much emphasis, overemphasis, on an intellectual approach. You know, whenever parents say, oh, you know, I hope my baby's smart, got to learn to read early. Intelligence is overrated, or they don't define it in the right way. They think of it as the conceptual smartness, the ability to verbalize, talk well, conceptualize, analyze. Nobody says, oh, I want my child to grow up to be kind. You know, I want him to be smart, because smart means then successful. And there's all kind of articles, how to, you know, improve your child's IQ. Where's our values here? And in one's own life, too, when one wants to study something, it's always through the intellectual gate. And people don't want to hear when they come to a lecture on Buddhism and they're really sincere and they're beginning to study Buddhism. They get turned off if they don't hear sort of the formal presentation of Buddhist concepts. But they talk about how to be kind or how to take care of one's mind and so forth. Ah, that's psychology. Ah, I could get a psychology book. Ah, my wife is a psychologist. If I need psychological help, I'll go to her. I want her about Buddhism. Hey, yeah, person's not talking about Buddhism. I'm not exaggerating. I don't want to hear about people's personal experience. Okay. I don't want to have to self-introspect. I don't want to. I don't think anybody ever puts it that way to them. Don't you want to live the Dharma? Or, and some people, it's very hard, even if you're aware of this. I'm thinking of one of our lay ministers who struggled with this very thing. He said, if he goes to heaven and he sees two doors, and one says heaven, and the other says a lecture on heaven, he wants to go into the lecture about heaven. That's good self-awareness, you know. That's the first step, self-awareness of what one predicament one's in. And just as very basically, we say, hey, I could take care of. I've got to take care of my own mind. I got to become aware of the garbage floating around in there. And I remember, again, Reverend Akegarasu, my father's teacher, telling the new ordained ministers, don't preach Buddhism. If you preach Buddhism, Buddhism will die. You live the teachings. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, you keep going, and you have a very beautiful January 15th, 2012. Thank you.